All right, after the podcast, we've got a cool interview with a brilliant man, Ken Burns, who is a documentary filmmaker, does all the PBS documentaries on every cool, crazy subject in America, literally telling America's story. He's got a new one he's doing, and we'll have that interview right after the closing jingle.
And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba. They have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind. So they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast.
The podcast.
The podcast. Big D and Bubba's podcast. The podcast. The podcast. Big D and Bubba's podcast.
Oh, yeah. What up, kids? Well, the podcast, once again, sponsored by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Seriously, so much love for O'Reilly. And if you are looking for anything for your vehicle, you need some kind of part, go to O'Reilly. Make sure you go. Do it. They're our friends.
Mind games or what?
Mind games or what?
Oh, that's a classic.
Dude.
I hadn't heard that
taking
in a long
you back.
Time.
I know. Taking you back with that gold.
Mind games or what?
So great.
So good. Yeah. Right. Carson, you cold? Yeah, looks like you're wearing a blanket.
I am wearing a blanket. It's a little chilly today. At least in here.
All right.
It is a little cold.
Wow.
It's colder outside of the studio than it is in the studio. I walked out to go and get some coffee before the podcast, and when I walked out there, you saw me. You turned around. I'm over here doing this. I'm like, just trying to move.
Oh, is that what you were doing?
Yes. No, I'm like, well, number one, I wanted the coffee to go faster.
Yeah. He's just hyper.
I just always think Bubba dances.
All the time.
Well, I'm like, come on, let's go, because I wanted it to hurry, but I was also kind of chilly out there.
Surprisingly, Bubba's not the dancer among us.
I am not the dancer.
I am the dancer.
Are, yeah, yeah, you are.
I do. We play a little, you know, music in the background when we're talking, and I catch a groove, man. It just the movement.
I'm the guy.
You catch a groove.
You catch a groove.
I'm the guy back in the back seat of the Impala, you know, just doing that. That's about as much as you're gonna get out of me.
And that's it.
Mm.
That's all you get.
I work my shoulders like Shaq.
I do when I laugh.
He has that commercial where he purses his lips and he does a little shoulder shimmy.
And that's you.
And that's what that's I think of. I'm like Shaq.
Do you see the picture of Shaq and Aaron Judge? I think I sent it to you, Big D.
Yeah, I saw it.
Somebody sent it to me. And it looks like an older picture. I'm sure it was. But it's so funny to see a guy who is 6'7", 280 pounds, look like a child.
Looks small. Yeah.
It was crazy.
My favorite picture of Aaron Judge is the one of him and Jose Altuve. They don't even look like they're the same species.
What do you mean? Like just
Jose Altuve is like 4'11".
Yeah, I'd have to look at it.
Oh man,
I don't think I've seen that one.
So it's a picture. It's happened a couple of times. Whenever the Yankees are playing the Astros, if Aaron Judge gets a double or gets on second base, and he's standing on second base, and Jose Altuve standing next to him,
you have the giant race and the pygmy race.
He's like 6'7", and he's almost. It just looks like, you know, because he doesn't look like a child. He's just a very small, full-grown adult next to a very, very large, full-grown adult. And it looks like someone used a shrink ray on him.
A shrink ray.
It does.
Yeah, shrunk the shortstop.
Yes, it's so crazy.
Look at my second baseman. He's tiny.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. I also love the fact that what's Shaq doing now?
Wow.
I just found up the picture.
Here, look at that. That's...
Dude, it does. It looks like a little leaguer standing next to him.
Exactly. There's a bunch of pictures because it happens all the time. Every time Aaron Judge is on second base in an Astros game, they that's what happens.
I hope he looks at him and goes, "Is this your wish?"
That's terrible. That's based on an old joke that I am not going to repeat. But man.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I was going to say something. I completely forgot what I was going to say. Oh, Shaq in the Papa John's pizza. I love how they have tried to redo the image of Papa John's after the old guy.
If you need anybody to improve your company's image, Shaq is one lovable dude. Yeah. Like, I can't think of anybody in America who's like, I don't like Shaq.
Yeah. I mean, everyone does.
Even if it's the commercials for the General. So like some auto company,
auto
insurance.
Why not?
And he's out camping or something. They find him.
Shaq's making bank.
Yeah,
man.
He is.
He's making so much money.
He's probably making more money now than he ever did in a year as a player.
Yeah.
Gosh. No doubt. Not counting his endorsement money back then. I'm just talking about just money. you know, just as his job. Mm-hmm. I mean, between the hosting and all that kind of stuff, yeah, he's making money.
Remember I took summer classes, and we would see Shaq, and it was always fun. It was always – he was so cool. Like, a lot of guys would go back – so Shaq went back to LSU after he left to get his degree. He promised his mama he would get his degree. So he would go in the summers and take, like, two courses. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys will do – now they do it online, you know, and they just get their credits and then, you know – or mm-hmm. back then even, they try to go to late-night classes or stuff. So they'd be – not Shaq. Shaq would show up for, like, a 3 p.m. class on Tuesday, Thursday and walk across the quad, and you couldn't – you can't miss him.
Yeah.
Because he was in his prime then. There was no – he was huge. And it was just so – it was great. And he'd walk through the quad high-fiving people. Everybody was like, hey, Shaq. He's like, hey. Mm-hmm. He looked, you know.
He was high-fiving no one. He was low-fiving low-fiving everyone.
Thank you, Bubba. That is an excellent correction. Yes. Shaq was low-fiving everybody in the quad.
What's the story about him and Mac Brown getting him to go to LSU?
Dale Brown.
The story that I – the way I heard is Dale Brown was giving a speech at an army base in Germany. And it was, you know, during the offseason, he was a motivational speaker, and he'd go and give talks. He's talking to all the soldiers. And after the speech, a guy came up to him and said, Coach, it was a really nice speech. I was wondering if you could give me any tips on my jump shot. And he goes, yes, young man, how long you been in the Army? And the guy he was talking to, who was taller than him, goes, Coach, I'm only 12 years old. It was Shaquille. And at 12 years old, Shaquille was a full-grown man.
Yeah.
And Dale Brown's response was, where's your daddy? Let's talk to him. You introduced me to him. Let's have a conversation.
And they kept – they wrote letters. Dale wrote him a letter every week.
Yep.
And they kept in contact.
I think they were still doing that all through Shaq's career. Like, mm-hmm. he was like a real mentor to him.
Yeah.
Almost like a second father.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. But it's going to be terrible to be that big.
Oh, well, yeah. There's
nothing.
It's terrible to be this big. I can only imagine to being over
7 feet
tall. Never
win at hide and seek.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shaquille. Hide behind the tree. That's not a tree. It's fall. Shaq.
He goes to a corn maze. He already knows the way out because he can see it.
There would be advantages to
Shaquille
that,
Shaquille in the corn maze is something I like. That needs to be an ESPN promo commercial. Yeah. Y'all remember when Shaquille did the ESPN spot? I only saw it a couple of times, and he was rescuing Mike the Tiger out of the tree. Like,
I don't remember that.
It's a cat stuck in a tree, and it's Shaquille. He walks up this ladder, and he comes down with Mike the Tiger over his shoulder. That's pretty great.
That's pretty great.
I love all of those things.
Carson has a big weekend. She is going to be traveling to Chattanooga to go see the Monkees in concert. Yes,
I am.
That's right.
Yes, I am.
That's right.
First of 3 Monkees shows this month.
Oh, wow. This month?
Yep.
You're going to see the Monkees 3 times?
I do. I've got 2 shows, the 30th and 31st, or no, the 29th and 30th.
Now, you're
Halloween
not
weekend.
75 years old. How did you even find the Monkees? Obviously, from MTV?
Yeah, when Nickelodeon would air the reruns.
Oh, Nickelodeon. So that was after MTV.
Yeah, and then my mom had Monkees records from when she was a kid. And I just can't like something. I have to obsess on it. So then I became a very, very big Monkees fan. And I'd only seen them once back in like 1986 when I was a kid.
And set back when they were all around?
No, it was only 3 of them. Mike hadn't been with them in years, but it was Davey, Peter, and Mickey. And Weird Al opened. That was a pretty dope show. And yeah.
How old are you at this show? Oh, Weird Al opening for the Monkees?
Maybe 8, 7?
Oh, you know.
8 years
old. You were the youngest person there, weren't you?
Nope, my little brother was there.
Oh.
But yeah.
And he's going to be at all these shows with you now.
Oh, yeah,
he?
Of course. Of course he is. Of course, yeah. We're traveling great. To see the Monkees. Oh, and
now, how many people will be at this concert?
It's probably sold out. Is it sold out?
Yeah, because I'll tell you what, I had to fight people for tickets. For the show that I'm going to on Friday the 29th.
Because they kept giving them to you? Or?
Like, please take these tickets. Don't make us fight you.
I had my pre-sale code. I am logged in the regular on sale is a Friday. No, I'm there on Tuesday. I've got my code, and I couldn't even get in the front section.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm on, like, side stage. What is
Carson
this?
Carson has VIP pre-sale codes for Monkees tickets. Absolutely. I just want y'all to know that's who we work with.
Of course I do. You should have seen me, because then I've got Alice Cooper on Sunday night, and I had my pre-sale code for Alice Cooper, and I had second row tickets in my basket, and then the browser shut.
What?
Mm-hmm. And so then I go back in, and the same 2 tickets were open. I was like, all right. So I clicked them. And I go to check out. I was like, oh, I guess the browser retained my history because it was charging me for 4 tickets. Oh, no. It was charging me for 2. They had upped the price. They had doubled it in the span of the 30 seconds it took me to log back in.
How do they do that? I mean, how can they do that?
They tell you that prices may fluctuate based on demand. And then I did some more research and I found out there are rumors, nobody's confirmed it, but that if you do pick those really good, the reason I went for second row, because I knew everybody going against me would be trying to get the front row. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, let them fight it out. I'll get second row. And they said, when you get tickets that are too good, there's something that'll shut it down. And that's why they booted me out. Yep. Who knows if it's true, but what do you think? I X'd out of my browser? Absolutely not.
Never trust the algorithm, man.
That, mm-hmm.
Oh, speaking of algorithms, what do you guys think of the, what is it, the Astro or whatever, the little Jetsons dog robot?
About this. I think it's the from the Terminator. What's that company called?
Skynet.
Skynet. Oh, it's Skynet. If you didn't already think Google was Skynet, okay.
It's an adorable little.
And now you got
friend.
Amazon making a little dog that lives in your house. Y'all, this ain't right.
It's a little. It's like a dog guy, and an iPad had a baby, and there you go. It's like Wall-E. The puppy version.
I still haven't set up my Alexa.
No.
I'm so out.
Alexa. That's basically
how
what this
gold
is.
Not already on the bar.
This little thing
Atlanta.
Is
Atlanta.
This little
Atlanta.
Thing is like a like an Alexa on wheels.
Yeah,
and it just rolls. Did you see the video?
Yeah,
of it?
I was watching it, and I thought
blinks its eyes and makes a little R2-D2 noises. And all. I mean, it's.
I don't think we said this on the air, but I was talking about the guy from Google who wrote the book about AI and how it's going to destroy all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And
we should have gotten him on the show. That would have been cool.
Oh yeah, because that's a real happy you know, distraction. Hey, we're your happy distraction on the way to work. Here's a guy to tell you about the end of the world. But he said that the what really turned him, he never thought about it, never gave it a second thought until he watched this robotic arm that was trying to learn how to pick up a ball. And all it was trained to do was pick up a ball so that the camera was watching it to see if it failed. And when it finally got it, it picked it up and it moved it toward the camera and waved it at the camera to show, like, look, I got it. Like a child. And he said, did it have,
I guess it did have some kind of sensors because it had to look at the ball.
Mm-hmm. It was using the eye, but like.
So it basically had digital eyes and then it could see the camera looking at it and it recognized digital eyes, game recognized game. And
that's
it goes,
not programmed.
Hey.
That's not
it
a program.
It wasn't programmed
move.
To do the thing where it waved it like, look what I got. Like a kid
it.
Does.
Just
and he
it.
Just
wow.
goes, oh, we taught it to be.
Oh.
Like, oh, it's proud of itself because it got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are we really teaching robots pride?
I don't know. But I'm just saying they're going to kill all of us.
We're getting rainbow robots?
No, that's not what she meant.
Oh.
At all.
Randy Rainbow Robots.
Randy Rainbow Robots. What
now, that is pretty scary. And like this little thing, like this little, what is it? Astro. Mm-hmm. It pulls up and it's got a little pole that comes out of its head and it will lift up and it's got a camera. So they're showing it checking like the stove to see if you have the stove on.
Yeah, that's all it's doing.
But wait, could you imagine this thing patrols your house at night? Mm-hmm. So could you imagine it rolling up into your bedroom? You're asleep and all of a sudden it's like
The pole goes
up and it starts looking at you while you're sleeping. And
I'm already freaked out enough because I sleep with my bedroom curtains open. I'm afraid of drones, which nobody in my neighborhood's flying a drone. But I mean, who are we
like
kidding?
Looking in on you?
But yeah. Mm. And now I got to worry about a dog that's in my house. Little robot.
A little robo dog.
Arf, arf.
It really is. It's okay. So I am so. I mean, your phone, let's all recognize your phone is a surveillance device that makes phone calls and does cool things and lets you get online. But this is like to a step so much further.
Mm-hmm.
And I want one. I don't want an Alexa. I have been anti anything in my home. I turned Siri off, but I want
of
a robot.
All of us. I really thought Bubba.
He'd be the last one.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah,
I know. No. This is how they got me. This is.
Wait, I got checked out for a second and distracted by a work text.
Yes,
did
I
Bubba
want one.
What?
I want
you?
One.
Of all people.
I know.
Oh my
I
gosh.
Know.
Oh my
I
God.
Know.
Imagine the morning he wakes up. And he goes to look at his prepper supplies, mm-hmm. and all the rice
they're
has been
gone.
Slashed.
They're all gone. And and the bullets are gone.
You're telling me it's got a bowl.
Well, Astro realized that you had bullets, and bullets aren't safe, so it got rid of them for you.
I have changed your code.
And then you see the screen.
You
can't get into your safe anymore.
The screen is just him sleeping. Just recording him sleeping.
I do want one, though. Like, they're really adorable. And I see, like, really cool applications for it for, like, elderly people. You know, elderly people, what's the one thing you do? You get them a dog or a cat or something for them to take care of. Because what they need to do to keep living, to keep feeling like they are needed, is to be needed. And they love company. And, you know, you sit there and you talk to the cat or the dog or whatever. This is that to another step. Because I think once... I mean, how many times have you had a conversation with Siri just to kind of test her to see how far you could go? It's really interesting. And you look at chatbot technology, like when you get on a car dealership's website and that little box pops up and it's like, "Hi, I'm Amanda. Can I help you today? What are you looking for?" And you start typing and it types back like real answers, not robo answers.
It's crazy, man.
So imagine that, but vocalized. And imagine an old person being able to go, "Hey, what time is it?" Because that's what they would ask.
Yeah.
It's 11 a.m. Oh, okay, cool. Well, what time is my thing later? 4 p.m.
But it's a dog, so it barks at you. It barks 11 to let you know it's 11 o'clock.
11 times. Well, I just think that eventually, I mean, you're going to be able to, you know, have the voice come out of it as
we
well.
We are doomed.
We're going to be talking to our robots, and I think that's kind of a cool thing for old people. I think... that they would absolutely find use in something like this. I do.
Well, if they've already gotten you, then everyone else.
Yeah,
is,
that's it.
It's so adorable. It really is. That's the problem. It's if it wasn't so cute. I mean,
well, they're gonna make it look bad, and you don't want it, of course.
Well, true. I don't know. Anyway, people can go and check them out if they want one. They're $1,000. They're going to be losing money on these things on purpose just to get them
into
your homes. Yeah, I
was saying $1,000 is not what I expected. Yeah,
we should get one here in the studio.
No! What?
It just running around.
You can have it follow, like you can tell it follow me, and it will literally follow you like a puppy dog. Yeah, it'll go all over. And it's like, you know, the little, because I've got one of the little Roombas. It will go and dock itself whenever its battery's low and charge up and do all this stuff. It's, I don't know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, but it doesn't have a camera on it. And it's not talking to Google or Amazon or whatever.
I've got a first-gen Roomba that I've had to order replacement parts for. By the way, I have done robot repairs in my home. How many people have done that? But I have to constantly, you know, change out all the little rubber parts and all that stuff that just kind of dry rots. And I won't – it's weird. I won't upgrade that Roomba because I'm afraid the newer models have listening devices in them.
But you want to get this dog.
But I want this robot.
Just
I know.
One
And you
giant,
have a phone.
I know. He's just one giant contradiction.
I know.
It's just, it's like he's Hippocrabot. I don't know. Well, I don't want the government to know what I'm doing. Let me download TikTok so the Chinese government will know what I'm doing. That'll be fine.
Yeah. I know. The rest of us are like, yeah, we're not TikTok.
Well, they're not part of Five Eyes. We're not sharing intel with them.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know what that means.
Of course
because
not.
Because we're that's part of
there is an agreement.
What website did you get that off of?
Oh,
there's an agreement that we have with our allies to where we spy on each other's people.
Got secret stashes hidden in places. He doesn't want us to know where they are, but he's on TikTok.
Right.
Like you can't be both of those guys. You can't.
I know.
I guarantee you Craig Morgan ain't on TikTok. You want to bet a dollar?
I know he isn't.
He's not. Because he's the guy hiding stuff in stashes and doesn't want the government spying on him.
You're almost there, Bubba.
I know.
I know.
Like you're kind of a
The problem is
kind of a poser, man.
I need to get so and so that's doing work for one of our subcontractors. I need to get him a code so they can get in the building. And Bubba's like, do we trust them? And meanwhile, he's like, can we get a robot from Google that follows us around?
Okay, but Big D knows since day one, since we first met, I have always been an early adopter of tech. I mean, before smartphones were even called smartphones, I had a smartphone. And I've always been that guy. I love the early tech. Right. I had a DVD player before anybody.
Why don't you have an Alexa?
Because it's spying on me.
Right. You have a phone.
I know. I know.
So you basically have an Alexa on wheels.
Yes.
That's what this is.
Yeah, yes. Your Alexa that normally would sit on a counter, instead you put it in your pocket.
It's a terrible thing. It really is. This is a terrible time in my life because as much as I know what it does and the evils of it and how it can be exploited, I still want it.
Alicia.
I don't have that clip. I thought I did.
Yes, you
do. Yes. Go, Patrick. Go take care of this. Yeah. I got a hero.
Thank you, Patrick.
Atlanta.
It's not labeled gold.
Should be labeled platinum.
It's this lady who has Alexa, and she calls it everything but Alexa.
It's called gold Alexa.
It's called gold. It's literally called gold Alexa lady.
Oh.
It's not labeled gold.
No,
it's not in the system anymore.
Oh, it doesn't have the hyphen.
Oh,
it does have the hyphen. I just looked at it.
Dude, okay, come look on my. Oh, there it is.
Sometimes Bubba just needs to shush.
He's so cute, though.
He does.
He is so adorable.
How many shovels have you gone through?
If he'd had that robot, it would have found
him. Yeah,
my robot would have just played it.
Alessi. Oh,
my favorite is still Atlanta. She said Atlanta.
I don't think it's on that clip, is it? No.
Yeah, it is the third one.
She says
Alessa. Atlanta.
Yeah. And it wouldn't recognize her voice. I don't know.
I don't know why.
The funniest is you guys have seen the Alexa Silver or whatever, Saturday Night Live thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
That is one of the funniest things ever. I played it for my dad, and he didn't get it.
Of course, he didn't get it because it was about him. This was a true story. Back early, you know, now when you call any 800 number, almost it's like, tell us what your problem is. Tell us why you're calling. You know, you can say billing or tech issues.
I hate phone trees.
I hate those. I'd rather press one for something. I don't want to have to talk to the computer. But I speak English. Some of my people don't really speak English.
Dude, I press one sometimes and it switches to English. I mean, to Spanish. And I'm like,
when I say my people, I don't mean people who don't speak English literally. I mean, you just don't speak English in a way you'll understand it. Because one of the first ones they ever used was for the police department in St. Martinville, Louisiana, which is my mom's hometown. And they had to pull it out after a week because nobody could get it to work.
Because the accents were
calling
so thick.
In, the computer couldn't understand their accents. Like, tell us why you're calling me. I don't know, but my chickens got stolen.
Somebody cut my paupière in there.
Try again. You can say robbery or, you know, man, somebody stole that from me.
I got a burglar.
We got a burglar in the hall.
It's
what's
a burglar.
Wrong with y'all?
And then
y'all send y'all a cop. We got a wreck down here in the parking lot.
What's the number for 911?
And finally, if I remember the story correctly, because this was 20 years ago, they finally got rid of it when the sheriff couldn't get it to work. Because he realized, I'm like, oh, well. Yeah, and then he kept hearing complaints, so he tried to use it and it didn't understand him either. Ah, it's my people. It's the best.
How many of y'all
have had people you know on television and they had to use subtitles even though they were speaking English?
I'm watching Waterboy one day, and I'm like, you know, I always used to make fun of it because I'm like, this is terrible. Because
nobody talks like that.
And then you find somebody in your own family who sounds, you know, the guy would do the thing like that, talk like that. Literally, that was my cousin.
It was Farmer Fran is the character in Waterboy. The one who goes,
no, I'm just talking about the high pitched thing.
Oh, I know, but like. I remember my mother saying, that's ridiculous. Nobody talks like that. And my own brother going, you have brothers that talk like that. Mm-hmm. We have uncles who talk just like that.
911 don't know what they're saying.
My grandfather was Cajun. He was 90 years old, and he had false teeth my entire life. So at least since he was 50, he had false teeth. And we only understood about a third of what he said. It was awesome. You really had to – kind of hone in and pay attention when he was talking because it was super Cajun. It's the best.
Alessa.
Somebody needs to do that. I need to see Cajun at Alexa.
I'm sure
Cajun
they have
trying
it.
To talk to.
There's a guy who does like the Thundercats and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure he's done it.
The Tundaminu?
Yeah, Tundaminu.
No idea what you're talking about.
Oh, my God. There's a guy who does Cajun parody stuff.
He overdubs Cajun words with, like, the Thundercats cartoons. Oh, they're great. They're great. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
Oh,
his
why
name,
you
so
got that knife?
Title.
Where you? Where that knife is?
I haven't seen it.
It's pretty funny.
You should send it to me. Anything else?
I got nothing.
You
man.
Ready to go, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
DJ Rhett. That's who I knew it was somebody.
It has been a very long day for us. Like we have for some reason it's way later than we normally do the podcast. And I think everybody's like, I'm out of here. And Carson wants to go get warm.
Hey.
She's
making
yawning.
Me tired because I'm cold.
She's got to get ready. She's got to get all her makeup on.
I do, right?
Her so, monkeys.
So which concert. Which one of the monkeys is your man?
Oh, Baba, what are we doing? Why do you keep doing
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I thought we were leaving.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Which one is your man, though?
It depends on the day. So, yeah.
Would you, you said that once, that you mm-hmm. would date one of them, right?
Of course.
Oh, Carson would go out with Mickey.
They're
Jones.
Almost 90.
I tried to get Mickey on the show for her birthday. I'm still sad I couldn't get that
done.
I tried.
Rude.
Huh. Okay.
Hey, I'll all let right. you know what octogenarians I pick up at the show.
All right.
Hey, you know what? You will be a hot commodity at the monkey show.
I know.
Like,
I know.
Man, there's this smoking hot chick over in the third row. You know, let me just get my walker and I'll go over there and see if I can buy her a Pepto-Bismol.
Move out of the way. I got a rascal. All right. Thanks, O'Reilly Auto Parts, for sponsoring the podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And for those of you who binge listen to the podcast, there are people listening right now who started at episode one. Salute to you. Big shout out. And for those of you who are watching, please make sure you spread the word, share the podcast, subscribe.
Five stars.
Rate us. Give us all the stuff. We want the algorithms to work in our favor. That way the robots will play the podcast
yes.
for as many of people.
Alessa, play me the above.
Alessa,
play the song
Alessa.
That said the podcast is
Alessa.
Over. This
Alessa.
Was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay.
That's okay.
You can listen to the regular show
Alessa.
On the radio every day.
Alessa.
It was the podcast.
Ken Burns on the hotline. What's up, Ken? How are you, man?
Good morning. I'm sorry we only have 10 minutes or less, but let's get at it.
Let's get at it, man. So the new one, man, Muhammad Ali, it's on PBS again tonight, and I wanted to – I think everyone has a Muhammad Ali story. I have one, and I know you want to hear it.
You have a Muhammad Ali story?
I spent some time with Muhammad Ali. I had dinner with him in Las Vegas years and years ago. He was very nice. Quiet. When there was a moment where people were like coming up to him and saying hi, and he was taking pictures with people, there's this one guy came up and he was drunk, and he like he is kind of play fighting, like he wanted to hit him, that kind of stuff. And I saw Muhammad Ali's eyes get like it. He was ticked.
That's the last thing he wants anyone to do is to play fight with him.
And he wasn't physically able to, you know, be like Muhammad Ali back in the day, but he had that fire in his eyes and that passion in his heart and soul. And the guy saw it and like
got afraid.
Yeah, totally changed. And I always remember that. There you go. There's mine.
Yeah, no, that's Muhammad Ali. You know, I think he had a flash. If this guy only knew what I could do in my prime, he would not be doing this to me. And yet he had a love for everybody. He was always the last person signing autographs, always tolerant of those. His early hero was Sugar Ray Robinson, and he had waited for hours for Sugar Ray to come out of his restaurant in Harlem, and Sugar Ray gave him no time, barely signed something. And at first he was okay with it. And then afterwards he said, if I ever become famous, I'm always going to give people the time. So he always felt like everybody had met him for the purposes of seeing him and getting some love. And he just did that his whole life. It was a really great, honorable thing to do. It's a great, great story. His story intersects with all the themes of the last half of the 20th century, of race, of war, of politics, of religion, of sex, of black athletes, of the role of sports in society, you know, you name it, all the things we're discussing today as well. And yet he transcends the sport, and our four-part, you know, eight-hour series that PBS started running. And by the way, it's also available for free streaming at pbs.org/Ali. So anytime you want to watch it, you can access any one of the four episodes.
Oh, cool.
How long does each of your documentaries take to make on average?
Well, it depends on how long they are. You know, this one took about 7 years from conception to broadcast, and that means there's fundraising. You know, it is CBS. We're trying to raise the money from our corporate underwriter, Bank of America, from foundations, from individuals.
And viewers like you.
What?
I said, and viewers like you.
And viewers like you.
And viewers like you. That means that PBS has some money in it. Whenever they say, and viewers like you, that means when you buy your tote bag at $60 a year, that goes into a general fund, and sometimes they support what we're doing. Yeah, but it's great. The trade-off for that, as difficult as it is that I'm able to spend the time necessary to do it. PBS has one foot tentatively in the marketplace and the other proudly out. So we get to spend 10.5 years on our Vietnam series. We get to spend 7 on this.
All of it worthwhile. What you did with country music,
I
love it.
That's like, it's like the encyclopedia of country music you never knew you needed until you saw it and you went, wow, that's where that came from.
Yeah. Ken Burns, his new film, it's called Muhammad Ali. It's on PBS. Probably the, I don't know, can I say probably the world's most famous documentarian?
Yeah.
Is that a word?
I don't know for sure.
Yes, Patrick.
I was going to say, Ken, was there ever something that you started working on and then there just wasn't enough of a story there that you just kind of abandoned the project?
No, I never have. I've been pretty, pretty lucky that way. And, you know, if I were given 1,000 years to live, which I won't, I would never run out of topics in American history. And I'm 68. I've been doing this for nearly 50 years, and I'm as excited about each project. We're working on 4 at once. You know, we're really, very, very active. I've got 4 different teams, and the next one's on Benjamin Franklin. We're also doing a big history of the American Revolution. We also have an amazing film on the U.S. and the Holocaust. We're doing one on LBJ and the Great Society. We're doing the history of the Buffalo. I mean, it's a lot of really fascinating topics.
Very, you know, just like none
that
of it is connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, that is so just scattered and crazy and cool. So I hate asking this, but which one is your favorite? Of everything that has been produced so far, what is your favorite baby?
Well, you know, I've got 4 daughters, and my oldest one is the co-director of this film, along with her husband, my son-in-law, David McMahon. I would be a terrible father. I've been fortunate enough in working in PBS that permits us the time to do these deep dives, that every time we release a film, it's a director's cut. So actually, I'm as proud of this film as anything I've done. The response has been overwhelming. I haven't yet stumbled upon a negative review about this film, and there's a great deal of enthusiasm about it. So maybe I'll cop out and just stay with Duke Ellington used to say when someone asked him what the most important composition was, and he's our most prolific composer, you know, he said the one I'm working on now. So we're just working on the ones we've got going, and that's where you got to give your attention and not worry about what is the best. I mean, obviously the Civil War was a big deal, baseball was, jazz, but country music was just a joy to work on. Vietnam, maybe the most complicated to do because of the thought politics involved in it, but you know, that was one of our most celebrated films, may have had the largest viewership that we've ever had, and this one is as good as I can do, and or as I should say we can do, because it's equally Sarah's and Dave's film as well.
I think the one thing that that all of us share in common is we start a Ken Burns documentary and go, well, let's see if this one's going to be any good. Because it's like the Vietnam, you brought up Vietnam, the Vietnam one, I didn't live through it, so I didn't know what I would get out of it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, within the first half hour, I was so enthralled with the story and how everything, the politics and the geopolitical chess that was going on. And it was one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen. And I will say that's one of my favorite documentaries you've ever done because it opened my eyes.
You know, I think trying to tell a good story is a difficult thing. It sounds like it's easy because all people do with one another is tell stories. But when you get that, if you can't spend 10.5 years on Vietnam, then you're going to be cutting corners. Then you're going to be making kind of allowing conventional wisdom to obtain, not tolerating the contradictions that are inevitable to any event, any human being, certainly true of Muhammad Ali, and obviously true of the Vietnam War. And one of the most satisfying things is not only that someone, as you say, who didn't live through it, loved it, but we had people who had lived through it and thought they knew about it and learned things.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, it's like the Muhammad Ali family. They called up in tears. I've never seen that picture of my daddy in me. Where did you find this? I didn't know that story. I didn't know that was the reason. I didn't realize he'd done that thing then, you know? And that's just, you kind of go, wow, it really paid off. Cause, you know, 7 years into something is a big, big, long commitment of time.
You can stream it on the PBS app. You can watch it on PBS. You can also go to the website, pbs.org. They have it all over the place, and it is brand new, and you're going to love the next newest documentary from Ken Burns, Muhammad Ali.
Ken, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, man. Have a great one.
You too.